Hello and welcome to Blockchain Gaming World, episode 144. I'm your host, John Jordan, and I'm very pleased to join him today. We have Amit Mahayan, who is the CEO of a US developer, Proof of Play. How's it going, Amit?
It's going great. Thanks for having me.
Good, good. Now, confession time. I have to say, I hadn't heard of Proof of Play and what you guys were up to until about 2 weeks ago when you announced a $33 million seed round, which was, I had to check my calendar. It wasn't 2022 and I'd been caught in some time warp because $33 million seed rounds were all the rage in 2022 and not so much in 2023. So that's sort of, I guess that caught everyone's attention. So plenty to talk about. You've got a company, you've got a philosophy, on-chain games, we like that. You've got a product, Pirate Nation. So plenty to talk about. But before we get there, let's find out a bit about you. You've been around in the game space and the tech space and the VC space for a while. So can we get just a pot of history about how you've ended up where you are?
Yeah, I mean, I started programming when I was 9, and literally the first piece of software I made was a game. And so I always wanted to be a game developer. I, you know, was building 3D engines in high school. You know, John Carmack was like my inspiration growing up. And then after college, I went to Epic Games, where I worked on the Unreal Engine, Gears of War, Unreal Tournament, before leaving and starting my first company, which was like a Club Penguin, Hollow Hotel, like these kind of like these games meet like the Sims kind of social, you know, environments. And it's called My Mini Life. And then basically we tried that for a bit, didn't quite work. So we started to build games using the technology that we developed. Our first game was a farming simulator that, you know, was bought by Zynga, got rebranded as Farmville, and, you know, was a, you know, huge hit on Facebook. And, you know, that was 300 million players, over a billion hours put into it, over $1 billion were made, by that game. I was at Zynga for a bit, worked on that game, Cityville, also ended up building kind of like a template that allowed other Zynga games to be made. And then left, started another company focused on growth, like growth hacking, basically for mobile games. That was bought by Google in 2014. That had a brief stint where I helped get this product called Fig off the ground. It was a crowdfunding for games. It was really cool. A bunch of really good games came through that. Rock Band 4, Pillars of Eternity, Psychonauts 2, all got funded on Fig. Eventually that company was bought by Republic. In 2017, in between Fig and my next company, I started a virtual reality and augmented reality fund. You know, my passion's always been between like tech and art and virtual world. It's kind of always been this kind of the nexus of these kind of ideas. And at the time I didn't have a really good idea for starting a company. So I started to invest in other people. And it was very early to that, 2015, you know, started to invest in companies in the VR and aerospace. You know, it's the metaverse stuff. So I was pretty early to that before the metaverse got like completely co-opted by all these other companies and Web3 and all these other things. But back then it was still kind of cool. In the process of that, I got deeper and deeper into crypto and saw like what was happening with Ethereum. Like, oh, it's really cool to be able to create software that just like you write it once and it just kind of runs forever and you can just never have to touch it again. It just, it's as long as it's there, it's you can interact with it. And so CryptoKitties came out, which was, you know, one of the first NFT games. And I saw that and I was like, oh, like we should build games based on NFTs. That's a good idea. Dug a bit more into it. I was like, oh, there's gonna be a lot of people doing this. Maybe I should build the way that all of these games, you know, exchange value with each other. And so got together with some friends, started a company called Rarebits, which was, you know, one of the first NFT marketplaces. It was basically, if it was not the same week as OpenSea, it was maybe the week before or after. It was around the same time. And then basically we were just like building this thing and then the entire market died in 2017. And we're like, well, what do we do? So we had all these ideas for how to make NFTs work. Let's tokenize wine. Let's go talk to comic book creating companies and get them to create tokens. Let's talk to Tops Let's talk to big brands. We eventually ended up doing a deal with Neopets, and we ended up doing a deal with Crunchyroll to essentially do like minted digital collectible type stuff. And that worked for a while, but it was still kind of middling. And eventually the team just kind of burned out. We're like, you know what? Like, it's going to be a while before this takes off. So I walked away from that company. We shut the company down in 2020. And 6 months later, you know, the Beeple stuff started to hit. They figured out, okay, like, you have pair of really good artists with like an offline kind of thing, and people kind of make the connection, and then it'll kind of work. And that's what cracked the NFT market. And so at this point, I was taking some time off, and I was like, I was watching this entire thing. It's like, oh my God, we were so close. Timing's everything, right?
Well, it's sort of funny. It's sort of funny because with your other companies, you've sort of been ahead of the game, but not too much ahead of the game. So you sort of timed that perfectly. You've been sitting there waiting for the wave. The wave's come along. And whereas this one, you were just a little bit too early and didn't quite sustain to.
I would actually argue that our timing was actually correct.
Okay.
I mean, look at the number one company in the NFT space. It's OpenSea, and arguably we started at the same time.
Yeah.
And so like our timing was actually really good. I think the thing that we didn't have was the long-term conviction.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. It's funny. I tell the team this, it doesn't matter how much money we raise. Mm. You're more likely to run out of passion and gas in the tank as a team than you are out of money. In fact, that was true of Rarebits. We raised enough money. We were very lean operation. We could have kept going for another 3 years, but just, you know, we burned out. And a lot of lessons from that for me as an entrepreneur, but ultimately, so I took some time off, saw this entire craziness happen. And 2021, I was like, okay, these roll-ups are really interesting. I think we can do real compute now on chain. So why don't I start to build, you know, the tooling's gotten better. I think we can actually do games now. And so, and by the way, we are, just to address your point, we are 100% early. Like, you know, it's day negative five, you know, in terms of this industry. And so, I saw that, and I was like, okay, like let's get this go. So we started the company in 2021, and we're just kind of hacking on stuff. We're like, okay, let's see if we can get something out. Let's release something, start learning. And as I was building, you know, I was like, okay, the thing that's really kind of sticking out to me is this idea of permanence and this idea of composability. So with my previous games, you know, I'm obsessed with this idea that if I'm working on something, I want it to outlast me. I want to, you know, even if I go away, the company goes away, I want this thing to continue to live on, because then it's been part of like the zeitgeist. It's part of the flow of technological innovation. And so like, you know, with Farmville, 300 million players, $1 billion put into it, but then the database was wiped in, you know, 2020. And so that 300 million player database, all the investment and creativity and the stories, all of the items people purchased, all of that stuff was gone. And so, you know, I was like, okay, there's so clearly like if a central company can like just shut these things down, then like, you know, even, you know, then, so the assets, but this is like the story of blockchain at this point. Like, okay, of course. Yeah. You own the assets. Got it. Okay. And if you got the NFTs, you own them. Fine. But then there's this additional thing. It's like, well, if I shut the game down, even if you have the assets, does it matter? Right? Like if I sell you a chess set, but all I sell you is the pieces and you don't know, I'm like, I'm not going to tell you the rules. I'm not going to give you the board. Like, are the pieces worth anything? Is there any value to you? I guess you could create your own games using the pieces. But ultimately, the value is not just in the pieces, it's in the utility behind those things as well. And so, you know, the differentiation between, like, say, just a traditional blockchain games as they've existed so far, this idea of kind of just giving you the NFTs versus putting the logic and the gameplay on chain as well, is that the utility also lives with the NFTs. It's also permanent.
Yeah.
And now there's debates around whether or not this stuff, permanence is valuable or whatever, but we'll get to that in a second. Composability. I've been building games for a long time, right? Like 20 plus years of building games at this point. And I keep building the same things again and again, right? I have to go and I build a leveling system and I build a crafting thing. And I'm like, okay, like, let me figure out like some sort of player attack mechanism, usually based off of Dungeons and Dragons. And like, okay, I'll pull these things together. Now I got like the skeleton of the game. I'll tweak them and now I have something new. The idea of being able to remix and mod has been part of gaming since the start, right? It's since day one of someone creating Pong, someone hacked that machine and created something else, right? I got my start in gaming by making Doom maps and then modding Quake and doing all that kind of stuff. As we went from kind of these downloadable games to games as a service, what we've basically done is we've lost that ability to customize. Yes, you could do it on PC, but the majority of players are on mobile and you can't do any of this stuff. Yeah. And then you have kind of like companies that are trying to solve that. Okay, you have Roblox and Fortnite with what they're doing. And now you have the ability to kind of create within the space again. But there's still permission. They still require the central entity to like approve your mods and approve all this stuff. It's like, it's basically not censorship resistant. And so something that's really interesting is like now when I build a game on chain, all of the modules, all the pieces of the game are there. Someone can take the game and completely fork it, right? Yeah. They can add to it. They can remix it. And so what we've done is every game that's added and created now becomes a building block for the next game. And that becomes the building block for the game after that, right? And so it's gone from this like every game developer is building in their own silo to now we're building independently, but also together. And so it becomes this like positive sum game development loop. So now like someone can create a really cool like, you know, ability system, and we can like take that, we can put it into Pirate Nation and just like attach it, right? Because again, it's all open source, and it's all open data. Someone can take Pirate Nation, they can fork it and create Ninja Nation or Space Nation. I hope someone does. Yeah. We're already seeing this in terms of what people are doing with our clients. You know, we built our Unity client, but someone else built a command line client. They have like a terminal that they use to play the game. Yeah. It's really cool, right? Because like it's like a return to the open and decentralized nature of the internet when like, you know, we each have our own web browsers. I may use Chrome, use Brave, but it's fine because they both render the web page. So the game becomes a protocol. And so that was the idea behind proof of play is not just like, let's just build blockchain games because Web3 is hot. No, it's, I think there's a new way of building stuff. There's new opportunities to create new types of gameplay. And new types of way to like enable developers to create, you know, innovate further and move faster. That's the idea we're exploring with this company.
So lots to pick out there. I mean, I just maybe without always going back to the $33 million raise, which is a big raise. Clearly, you can make money from open source software, but open source software is harder to make money off of than proprietary software. So you come in, you've got this very open view. You want to sort of, you know, obviously create a great game with Pirate Nation. You want people to play that. That's sort of your Trojan horse to get people into messing around and building their own stuff. But how does the business model work? I think fundamentally, when it comes to blockchain as well, this is something that hasn't really been well understood from lots of game developers. This idea of being sort of part of the game developers sort of become part of a community, and they sort of lose control, and a lot of the trading, if it's happening on NFTs, is happening between players, and the developers are getting some of that, but they're not being able to sort of issue as much primary stuff. So go to the business model a little bit, which is how does that work to build an open source on-chain gaming platform?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. So there's two things that, you know, come to mind there. One is, I mean, the business model is very straightforward. It's like, okay, we're taking the game, we're going to offer a variety of platforms, we're going to sell premium content, and that's like direct sales, right? Okay. That's easy. Makes sense. And, you know, we're the, you know, there's still like copyright and stuff around the assets we create, you know, we'll have like fair use and all this other stuff around it. But like, the point is that like, you know, we're the purveyors of, you know, say like a ship skin or something else that we decide to sell to our community. Cool. That's easy. That makes sense. The second is that if we essentially create an ecosystem, right? If we create an ecosystem where players are creating content, they're trading with each other, they're engaging in this like economic universe, then, you know, if we provide, you know, the tools to allow them to trade with each other, to buy and sell from each other, then we can essentially run the equivalent of like the auction house or the marketplace or whatever. And that ends up becoming what, you know, is either a secondary royalty or a marketplace fee. There's a bunch of things that come out, like the economic activity itself. And that's like, what's cool about all this stuff, it's like really like symbiotic. You know, like we're not going to, like the game is not, I should say this very clearly, the game is not pay to win. In fact, we're very anti pay to win. So like, you know, it's very important for us to create a fair environment, and you can kind of see how we've been doing that so far. But like, with like, you know, we have like this whole thing with like, you know, we have like Gen Zero pirates and we have Gen One pirates, which are free to play, but they have equal footing in combat. There's some like, you know, auxiliary benefits. Like it's almost like collector's edition versus like the standard edition. But ultimately in PvP and all these other things, it's going to be completely fair. There's no difference in terms of abilities and the ability to compete. That's really, really important. And so, so with like the vanity stuff, that's pretty straightforward. And then the secondary, the economic activity, it's like, okay, if people are coming and they're finding enjoyment in the game or they're they're creating, you know, assets, they're speculating on the market, whatever people do in these games, right? If we're providing a service, which is like, okay, like, you know, you guys are selling items to each other and okay, we're basically like the bank in Catan. Okay. That's like helpful, right? And there's something we could do there where it's like, okay, we'll charge a small fee. A lot of people essentially do things like that. Actually, I should also mention everything I'm saying is like, it's forward looking, it's future, it's could change, but like ultimately, like this is how we're thinking about it, you know?
Yeah.
The third is that, we have a, we have a belief that like if we create a set of like, you know, tools and services that we use to build our games and we like essentially make it easier, we have like hosted versions of those things for other people, we can eventually go that way as well, which is like SaaS products and so on. But my primary view on this is that the majority of the revenue from the company is going to come from one and two. It's going to come from primary sales to people and secondary sales from just from providing like essentially these like these utilities within our the economy of the game itself. And I don't think it's really controversial. In fact, you know, that's kind of like the bet in a lot of ways, because like if you think about mobile games, for example, like the entirety that mobile gaming companies have is it's all about like lifetime value versus your cost of customer acquisition. And so all you're seeing is these games just like push and push and push on the LTV and then like try to push down the cost of acquisition, the CAC, as much as possible. And they do that through like, okay, we'll test a variety of channels. We'll do like optimization. We'll do like lookalike audiences on Facebook. We'll do all these things to try to make this equation just like work to where it's net positive. And my belief is that like, okay, I think blockchain games are just going to completely blow out that model. And you're going to end up seeing that the LTVs are just significantly higher because these people aren't viewing these things as like, just like, oh, I'm just buying, you know, I'm watching ads in the game or I'm buying, you know, these items. They view it as like, oh, I'm committing to this universe, right? I'm committing to this ecosystem. I'm committing to this community, which is just a much stronger, it just hits a lot more of the innate human desires, right? Which is like connection, a sense of progress, a sense of being able to be creative, to be able to contribute back. There's like a whole bunch of things you can do that just like you don't really get in just like a hyper casual mobile game. And so those reasons, we're exploring this idea and I think this is how, you know, we could justify the raise.
I mean, given you've been in the space for a long time, you've been talking about some very, I agree with you, some very sort of fundamental psychological desires that humans have. And we used to want to own physical things and now we've sort of moved on to be happy to own digital things or have digital services in a way that, you know, you wouldn't have done sort of 30 years ago. So given that, you know, you've looked at a lot of tech over the years, you've come to blockchain with a sort of game designer's hat on and you sort of, loads of cool stuff we can do. We couldn't do this stuff before. Why do you think so many game developers or a vocal section of game developers have looked at this new tech and just gone, this is just bad tech and have not been able to see past that? Because it seems, clearly you can see some bad actors and some sort of logical reasons why people might not like certain aspects of it. But on a very fundamental level, if you sort of strip down the actual implementation of a particular blockchain, if you just thought gamers can own their own stuff, no one can take it off them, they can maybe trade that with each other, and they have sort of more power with the developer to make their voice heard. I mean, I think on that level, it'd be very hard for game developers or even gamers to say this is a bad thing, you know, at that level. And it seems to be striking.
Yeah. It's funny. I've been through many cycles of tech at this point. And people are like, okay, like, you know, if you look at, like, there's always going to be a vocal minority in games. There always has been, right? Yeah. Like, and I actually say it's a vocal minority very clearly because if you just kind of look at the numbers, like there's obviously more people playing mobile games than console games. Like it's just, It's just like, you know, it's just completely different. And so, but like, you know, there's always been this kind of phase shift, right? And where, you know, we went from like box software to online software to like, okay, now you like, you maybe, you know, it's like you have to download new content. Now you have in-app purchases. Now you have social games. Now you have mobile games. Now you have blockchain games or VR games or whatever, right? And every one of these, it's like, oh, like, this is bad for gaming because for whatever reason. But ultimately, like, this technology is ethically neutral. NFTs aren't inherently bad. They're actually just wrappers, right? All they do is just, they're just wrappers for ownership. And so you can use it to be like, you know, to create monkey, you know, monkey JPEGs and like, and just like pump those all you want. Or you could use it to like tokenize, you know, like a piece of real estate and then fractionalize it so you can essentially get some equity out of your house without having to sell the entire thing. So there's like, these things are just, they're just utilities. And so I think the same thing is true of the database itself, right? So like, you know, at the end of the day, no one cares if I'm using Amazon or at, you know, Microsoft's, you know, Azure or Google Cloud or whatever. Likewise, I don't think gamers should really care if we're on, if the state is stored on chain or if it's stored on, you know, Ethereum or Avalanche or any of these other chains. It doesn't really matter. So as a game developer, the reason I would, you know, not be for it is just, it's very restrictive as a technology. Like, you know, I have a database and it's super fast. I can do tons of writes and like, I can just build my game. Right. So there has to be a real kind of pull. There has to be a reason to adopt this technology. And I think for most people, they haven't seen it yet. And so it's a reasonable thing to be distrustful of, especially with all the nonsense that's happening in the markets. But it's like, oh, like, but I do think people are throwing out the baby with the bathwater a bit and like missing the nuance of how these things could potentially be used. So in that way, like, I actually think anyone who's building games right now using this tech and like not doing like NFT sales and things like that is actually like pushing the state forward, right? We're pushing the industry forward. We're trying to be like, okay, look, we think it's possible to create a really fun game using this stuff. And by the way, I don't think anyone has yet. I think people have gotten close and there's some really talented teams out there and really polished projects, but I don't think anyone's like cracked it yet. But like, I think we're pretty close. There seems to be some really good games coming out now that Apple's opened up the ability of going to the App Store. I think you'll see more of that stuff. So our approach very much is just like build a fun game first, hide all the complexity of the tech. I don't think people care about it. Later, they can figure out about the permanence and the tradability and all this other stuff. That's later in the user journey. Focus on just getting them in and giving them a great, fun experience and get invested in the world. And then you can be like, oh, look, you can also do this. You can also do this. I mean, think about Fortnite, right? You got in. People were playing that because Battle Royale was really, really fun. They got in. They're like, oh, hey, you can also go see a concert. You can now build stuff, right? So it's that you bring people into the universe. You give them a reason to be there, to connect with other people, to have a sense of community. And then you just give them more and more and more, show them, like pull back the curtain, right? And I think once that happens, I think the distrust will go down because someone's like, oh, that's how it can be used. But it's pretty obvious. There's not like a one or two games you'd be like, oh yeah, this is it. Like, oh, look, this could not be done before on a console. It could not be done with a, you know, on a mobile phone. It could not be done with a centralized database. So I think like that's what we collectively as an industry are trying to explore and figure out.
Okay, let's talk a bit more about the fun game first then. So so Pirate Nation, I don't know, I mean, how much, obviously you want that to be a great experience. It's your first sort of game, and it's sort of showcasing what you're doing, but you know, clearly your I guess the long-term vision is you have many games and you're sort of a platform company. So how do you sort of work that out, because there is obviously a lot of narrative around when people see $33 million fundraise and the game they're making is called Pirate Nation, they're just like, oh, so they got $33 million for the game, which is not exactly correct. But how did you come up with that game? Why is that, you know, why pirates?
No, it's really funny because, like, to me, the fundraise, especially the announcement, is a massive distraction. Like, I don't want the attention from
the
fundraise.
You've got the money now.
Yeah, it's just like, it's a huge distraction. I mean, we do it. The reason we do it is so that people are like, oh, these guys have runway. So if you're a talented person, we're hiring. If you're a talented person, come work with us. We have smart people. We're working on good, hard problems that are compelling. We're trying to push the state of the industry forward. Like, come work with us. Right. That's the reason we did it. But like, you know, the. Yeah, so Pirate Nation's interesting. So the company was actually started with myself and this other guy, Mark Skaggs. Mark's now an advisor to the company. Mark was the GM of Farmville. So we worked together on Farmville and Cityville and a couple of other games at Zynga. Very talented game designer. And so, you know, we were thinking about Farmville, like, oh, we're like, okay, like, what's, why did that work? Okay, the theme is really important. Like, everyone loves farming. The graphics are really, you know, are really cute. In fact, our art director is this guy, Craig Wojda, who is actually the art director of Farmville. So Craig's also a co-founder of the company, and he's doing the same thing for this company. But long story short is, we're like, okay, we need a theme. And pirates seems just, I don't know how we came up with it. Just like, okay, pirates is like a pretty good theme. Like, a lot of people know it. Like, One Piece is huge in Japan. Like, you know, Pirates of the Caribbean is like huge worldwide. Like, you know, this is a pretty good theme. And so we just started to hack on it. And the game truthfully is, we're building in public. The first version of the game was really simple. In fact, we didn't even have like a Unity client. We had a web-based version we were running internally. And then we ended up, you know, we launched the game. We did a free mint. We just gave away a bunch of pirates in November, and then launched the game in December. So the first thing is that we have a launch game, which is unique for an NFT project, right? But then what we did was every week we launch updates. Okay. And Pirate Nation is, you know, to me, it's not the be all end all. It's the thing where we figure out how to build on-chain games. We make our technology work, right? And it's the equivalent of what Farmville was for Zynga, or what I think, you know, when I look at something like Epic Games and how Tim Sweeney built that company, it's like he built Unreal so that he had a sandbox to figure out how to build 3D games. And then out of that, he came Unreal Engine. And then he used that to build, you know, every other game after that and completely transform the industry. And so Pirate Nation is just our sandbox, and we're like figuring all the parts. Okay, how do we make like user onboarding work really smoothly? How do we get this working on mobile? How do we do random numbers? How do we, you know, make it so that we can build much more complicated gameplay? So we're just like figuring this all out in Pirate Nation, and then we're going to take that and basically that same kind of technology stack and just use it to build next game and the next game and the next game. But what's cool about it is the things I mentioned before, which is about composability. Everything we put on chain is not just there for other people to make games. It's also there for us to make future games. So we're done writing a quest system. We have one. It's built. It's done, right? I'm never writing another one again in my life because I already have one. It's on chain. I can just fork my existing code and just keep going with it. Yeah. And so you can imagine what this does for your ability to launch new products. So my hope is that we get to the point where we're constantly just launching new products. But the one thing I will clarify is that when I first pitched this company, I didn't say we're a games studio. I said we're a single game studio. So even if we have a completely different website and we call it, you know, Space Nation, Ninja Nation, whatever it may be, because the nature of these things is again on-chain, everything is connected. So everything is part of the same universe. So one way to think about it is that we're actually we're basically creating the equivalent of the Marvel Cinematic Universe, right? And Pirate Nation is our Iron Man. It's the first thing, but we can easily go and create, you know, Ninja Nation, but it's just a different entry point into the same universe because they all live there. And so that's the intention, is that if you look at our characters and you look at what we're doing with those avatars, like my hope is that we end up taking that character art and those character NFTs, and we bring them to they end up going to every single world. So the story of your character and your pirate is like, oh, you know, he became a level 20 pirate and did all these things, and that's like part of the account history and the NFT history now. But then like found a portal and then went to the portal. Now he's in Ninja Nation, and then he became a level 1 ninja, and then he like leveled up there and did all this other stuff. So you can actually see that your play state and your account comes with you through all of the games. So it's possible to start creating these really interweaved universes. So, you know, I'm not going to use the word metaverse, but it seems like it seems similar, right?
Yeah, it shares some attributes.
Yeah, but let's be very clear. That's not our goal, right? We're just trying to make fun games, and we'll see where it goes.
And I guess that sort of comes back, because the surprising thing to me about the announcement was, you know, was making fully on-chain games. And sort of personally, I think that's sort of the coolest part of the industry. That's also the hardest part of the industry. There's lots of cool on-chain games being made, but they're generally being made by very geeky people who have problems onboarding anyone else apart from their geeky coder friends. And so that, there's loads of stuff going on there, but no one talks about it because you have to have a PhD in something or other to understand.
Yeah, our tech team is super, it's really, really, I just want to call them out here because they're like really talented.
Yeah.
That's just the stuff they're coming up with. And like, you know, we're a small team and we've done like 42 releases. of the game, and we just keep pushing the boundaries, and it's just, they're so talented. I'm so privileged to be able to work with them.
But for you, it's interesting looking at, you know, where we've seen over the last sort of year, 18 months, where we've seen that sort of the sort of known people who have 10, 20 years in the games industry going into blockchain games. I guess most of them have gone into what we might call maybe a bit uncharitably Web 2.5, where they sort of, you have an NFT and a character and maybe some NFTs are specific game items, but they're trying to build a game that would sort of look very much like a traditional game. And that's really been where a lot of the VC money's gone, and that's where a lot of the sort of talent has gone. And you're doing something very different, you know, because those are not fully on-chain games. Those are mainly off-chain games with a bit of on-chain components, maybe some marketplace stuff, maybe, you know, a bit of DeFi in there. So that sort of approach just doesn't appeal to you at all, to make a nice looking game with some NFTs, and that's enough blockchain for you. You're nailed into the 100% blockchain side of the equation.
I mean, we'll see, right? Like, I'm, you know, at the end of the day, I believe it's weird. You know what it's like? It's like we're climbing a mountain and we're not sure if there's a path to the summit.
Yeah.
Right? And thus far, we've been able to keep going.
Mm.
I'm like waiting for us to hit a wall where I'm like, okay, like we're stuck. And maybe we'll get there in scaling. Maybe we'll get there when it comes to some sort of like payments thing. But like, so far, we're just kind of like, we're pushing. And like, you know, we just keep knocking down the barriers. So, I mean, like, we have a version of the game running on the phone, right? I have a Tesla-like build of the game running on my phone. And like, it works. There's like why wouldn't it, right? It's just data. So like, so ultimately, like, you know, like we have all of the, you're right. It's hard. So the one thing is, it's harder to build on-chain games. It's definitely harder. But the thesis is that if we can actually build the tools, if we can actually figure out how to build the games well, then we can accelerate development. Like it's actually faster in some ways to build on-chain games than it is to build a centralized game. So like an example here is like, you know, it's possible right now for our designers to go and like essentially add new content to the game and actually put it on chain and without us having to touch any of the code. And if we do that for the next game, we won't even have to build that tool chain again, it just exists. Right. So what we've done is, you know, we have the equivalent of like a database for our game, but that database just happens to be the blockchain that all of our games are running on.
Yeah.
We don't have to run servers. I'm not going into, you know, AWS and like provisioning servers for the game because the blockchain is the server.
Yep.
And so there's like a bunch of things that became a lot easier. Right. And so, you know, so we'll see. I mean, obviously there's types of games we can't build. Like we can't build FPSs on chain. It doesn't make sense.
Yep.
So like there's a type of game that works really well. And then we also get a whole bunch of other things for free. You know, obviously all the economic trading stuff ends up being there, the trustless environment. Security and auditability, so people can see what other people are doing. Right, they can see if anyone's cheating, and everyone can see it. And so what's really cool is now the community has become part of our play testers. They become part of our bug testers. They mine on the test nets. Now they're mining our data. It's completely changed. And so for me, like, this is the most interesting part of this entire thing. Like, I've built games before. You know, like, why do I just want to go build another mobile gaming company and just replace the payment rails? It's not appealing to me personally or intellectually or from my curiosity perspective. But this stuff is, because it's new. And I think you're going to start getting to a space where I think you can enable new types of gameplay.
Yeah.
Right? So the ability for people to, like, do UGC, to create their own generated content, to be able to do plugins for the game, right? You can't replicate that with Web 2.5 games. And so So that's like the, to me, that's like the rain, you know, the gold on the other side of the mountain if we get there. And so yeah, it's, you know, if someone goes and figures out, okay, yeah, you can just sell a bunch of NFTs on a mobile app, and instead of using an iApp, fine, right? Like, but I don't know. I'm here for the for this. This is like really what gets me excited every day, and how I'm able to keep working on this.
Yeah, because I mean, I don't know whether you like the analogy, but it is if you build the platform and the tools and a few games, and they come, and then you have this community all building. So I mean, you have effectively, you know, from the bottom up, built a sort of Roblox type platform. I mean, that's, I guess that's the promise of lots of blockchain. You're not the only people trying to do that. There's lots of people sort of have taking slightly different approaches to that sort of thing, but that's sort of where you end up, and you end up with, as you say, all the payment stuff for free anyway. So you end up with this sort of Roblox.
Yeah, I would go a step further and say that Roblox, the decentralized Roblox, already exists.
Okay.
And it's the Ethereum blockchain to begin with, and it's associated satellite. I mean, like, I have this tweet. It was like, the metaverse already exists. It's just the shared state of the blockchain itself, right? We already have it. We're already doing it, right? We're just visualizing it in different ways. You think it's a 3D world. I think it's actually an integer on chain, or like a representation of that integer in the form of like an image or whatever it may be, whatever the metadata says it is. And so, I mean, that's how I've always viewed it, is that it's that, and really what's really where it gets really exciting is right now we're doing this thing in Pirate Nation where anyone who's got, like, we're basically doing this thing called Parlay, where like we're onboarding different communities into the game. So we launched the free to play version of the game, but it's gated. Like, it's basically like, you know, you need an invite code, or you need to, you know, basically need to be invited to play the game. And the reason why was because we were worried about just like blowing up the economy, right? So we have to like just titrate and make sure that everything looks good. And so we've been doing this thing called Parlay, where we, like, you know, we go to a community. So we did this with Pudgy Penguins first. Yes. We said, like, okay, if you have a Pudgy Penguin, you can basically just skip the line. We have like 200,000 people on our wait list. Like, just skip the line. You immediately just get to pick your pirate and start playing the game. And it's like, it's interesting because there's like no permission there. You can just do it. Right? So we can do things like that. It's possible for us to actually just go and create voxelized versions of these penguins and put them into the game if we wanted to. Right? So you start to get this like really interesting thing where, like, you know, all, again, like all of the content, it's part of this like greater zeitgeist, right? It's just almost like how, like, you know, if you're watching The Simpsons, like The Simpsons would like have all these like, you know, pop culture references in them, right? Like, arguably all of crypto is like that currently. And so what's really cool is that we're all still playing in the same sandbox. You may be like, oh, you're proof of play, you're building on-chain games, you're not doing this art thing, but I'm like, no, but we kind of are, right? Because again, it's all compatible. And so I don't think we've, like, as like an ecosystem, I don't think we've fully explored the idea. We've done a little bit. You've seen kind of these remixes of people's content, NFTs, and like people are kind of doing these kind of one-off projects. I don't think we've seen this at scale yet. Maybe the closest is like DeFi, where, like, you know, people are doing like the composability of DeFi, and you have these like kind of building blocks. And there's a profit motive there to do it. But we haven't, I don't think we've like seen it truly at scale yet on the creative side.
No, I think that's a good point. And I guess it's kind of interesting, your metaverse is the state of Ethereum sort of view. And I think that we've been, you know, in some ways, the whole problem with the metaverse is it's been set up as a very specific, this is how you view the metaverse. And in 100 years' time, that may be what the metaverse is, but you have to have a shared bot. You have to sort of choose what the common denominator, bottom line basis for this cool looking 3D thing that it may eventually end up being. And I think that's the problem with metaverses, is that everyone looks at the visuals and what's the shared space. And I guess that's a little bit.
Yeah. And I mean, obviously, Facebook's co-op the term now. And so, like, I think it's a red herring, personally. I think you just build fun stuff and give people creative tools and like just let them explore their creativity as easily as possible. Like, you know, a lot of ways, like, you know, like what WordPress did for web publishing, like we need like that level of like creative unlock to truly realize this idea. And so I tell a team, I was like, look, like, you know, it's not enough for us to be able to just build games in this really complicated way. We have to figure out how to, you know, give our solutions away to other people where like anyone could do it. And so like the engineering team internally, their customers are not the players. Their customers are the designers and the artists and the producers at the company. And so, you know, as we build tools and technologies and services for those people, they then create the game that then goes out to the players. And so, you know, so like there's this idea of like, I worked on the editor on the Unreal Engine. Yeah. And, you know, the ability to give someone creative the like knobs to be able to like visually work with what's a mathematical formula is incredibly powerful. And we haven't really seen that yet for chain. The closest we have is like an image uploader where you can like go and like upload something to like Zora or whatever, right? But like doing that like at the like the design level, at that kind of level is like still new to this industry. And so we need that WordPress moment, I think, before we start to see the true kind of explosion of creativity.
Cool. And bringing us, as we come to an end, so bring us back to the scale here in terms of Pirate Nation and what you guys are doing. I mean, obviously maybe there's a slight sort of elastic sort of timeline, but for the next 6 months, is it a case of pretty much just doing your weekly build and bringing more community members in, or is there anything else we should be looking out for?
I mean, so yes, you know, I think we'll start to explore other platforms as okay. well. I think internally we have a huge bunch of stuff that we're doing to like upgrade our core kind of our core layer. That's less mm-hmm. interesting for players. I think what is interesting is how can we get more community involvement with game design and asset design decisions?
Okay.
I think there's something we could do there. Mm-hmm. And then the other part of it is that, you know, I'm hoping, knock on wood, that we start to open source a bunch of our stuff so that people can start messing around with our technology stack, yeah. build games, you know, in similar ways, and hopefully have something that's like kind of like turnkey, right? You just kind of clone this thing and now you have like a Unity app that you can then just go and deploy. And it's got all the networking built in and just, you know, and just let people like really just kind of focus on the thing that matters, which is like, okay, how do I just get to the creative part as quickly as possible?
Mm-hmm. Cool. Good, good. And for everyone else, if you're not on the wait list, I guess sign up the wait list. You can become number 200,001 or something.
By budget payment. Or join our Discord. If you join our Discord, piratenation.game, okay. If you're in there, we're giving out codes all the time.
Okay.
Like, you know, we're actually pretty liberal with them. So like, if you're like not a bot, like, you'll get to play the game, basically.
Cool. Good. Well, thank you very much for your time. That was fascinating to get a real deep dive into what you guys are planning.
Yeah. Thank you so much. I really appreciate that. Thanks for the time as well.
And thank you to you for watching, listening to the podcast, however you are consuming it. Every episode we are talking to the people who are having these big visions, all different approaches to how we're sort of using blockchains and the sort of the technology and the concepts that come with them. An enormous amount of games being built of different types. So hope you are subscribed to the channel and come back next time to see what's going on. See you then. Bye-bye.